from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to Guns Over Texas, brought to you by AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, your 2014 concealed handgun license headquarters. I'm range operator Jeff Sanford, joined by my cohort, CHL instructor Gary Montgomery.
Thank you, sir.
And law enforcement contributor Jason Berry.
Always a pleasure.
Houston, if you have questions, comments, you want to get involved with us and talk all things that go bang, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. And thanks to Gary, there's any number of other ways to get in touch with us via computer.
Yeah, there's we're on Facebook, so Facebook/Guns Over Texas Radio. We're also on the Texas Gun Talk forum, and we're, of course, available at GunsOverTexasRadio.com.
All right. So, fellas, before I get started and ask you what's new in your gun world this week, I'm going to talk a little bit about there's a charity that's near and dear to my heart. It's called Flags for Fallen Vets, and they go out and they supply all the flags that are to be put at Houston Veterans Memorial Cemetery, and they are looking for support for the 2014 Memorial Day event that they're going to be putting on out there. They are currently at about 62% of their budget to buy flags, and they have until the 21st of this month to reach their goals. So you can go to their website. Oh, gosh, where is that at? Flagsforfallenvets.com. It's flags, F-O-R, fallenvets.com. And you can donate through the website. You can also donate via snail mail at Flags for Fallen Vets, Inc., at 1002 Davis Street. That's 1002 Davis Street, Cleburne, Texas, 76033. You can also do a phone donation. This will be the easiest thing for most folks. I know this is definitely the way I do it. 817-798-9414. That's 817-798-9414. It is a tax-deductible donation. For just $5, you can get 11 flags at the cemetery. Just $5 for 11 flags. If you got $100, that'll get 232 flags, plus your name on the website if you'd like, and a free t-shirt available too. So once again, if you have the time, if you've got a spare couple of bucks, go to flagsforfallenvets.com for the Memorial Day event at Houston Veterans Memorial Cemetery. I know I'll definitely be there, and my buddy Ken and Spring will be there too. And if any of our listeners want to meet up and go take care of that and set out a bunch of flags with us, we'd definitely like to have you guys out. So flagsforfallenvets.com, 817-798-9414. So, Gary, Jason, what's new with you fellas this week?
Actually, nothing new for me. Last week I was recovering from doing my level 3 Krav test, and I was still recovering from that and got sick earlier this week. But this morning I actually got some trigger time in with a friend of mine and her sister, and introduced, a reintroduction for her sister to firearms and kind of spreading the brotherhood of the spiral too.
Did y'all go to Impact Zone?
Went to Impact. The road out there has been greatly improved.
Oh, good for Phil.
It's as usual, it's a nice place to go and do real work.
Did y'all shoot steel or did y'all set out paper targets?
We did paper today. I actually have steel coming in that I'm going to start working with as part of my drills for USPSA and IDPA practice. Actually buying steel from MGM Targets. Is who I'm getting my steel from.
You know, you can rent steel from Freedom Munitions.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it at the local store lately. I know I've seen it before, but I just didn't see it last time.
I think they moved it out of the showroom.
Okay.
But really cool deal. You can get the Texas Star. You can get all kinds of stuff.
Which, strangely enough, the Texas Star is no longer legal for IDP competition.
Why is that?
Rule change. I've forgotten what exactly it was. But
Bill Wilson get beat by somebody on it and
probably
change the rules?
For all I know. But, you know, it can be.
If they're trying to give you a quote-unquote tactical realistic situation, the Star is kind of a game thing.
Well, yeah, there's nothing.
But it is a game in the end. I mean, it's still a game.
I don't think that was what it was. I think it may have had something to do with the time it took to reset it and issues that come up when people miss the plates. Because you've got basically a big hunk of steel that's sitting out there, and they get damaged very easily and that sort of thing. So that may have been part of it. But I just remember distinctly that that was one of the targets that is not legal for IDPA anymore.
Well, what kind of steel do you have coming for us? Do you have any spinners?
For us.
Like how I threw that in there?
Yeah. No, I'm just starting out with just basic 10-inch plates that I'm going to put on 2x4s. Kind of steel challenge kind of stuff. I may get some larger plates later. They're AR-500, so I can use them at a distance for rifle, up close for pistol. Mm-hmm. So just a couple plates for now. We'll add stuff later as I have time. So
if you can get us some spinners too, that would be my request. So the steel spinners are a great way to take egos from people.
The spinner does. And for those, you know, you may want to describe the spinner. It's
like a
pendulum
paddle.
Type. Yeah, it's
up and down. You've got one high, one low, one
and
pointing
one's
to the
larger
right, one pointing
the
to
other.
The left. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have to start at the bottom and then shoot the top. And you've got to time everything perfectly to make this spinner spin. And it can be a heck of a frustrating day if you've never done it before.
Yeah.
And if you've somewhat got it figured out, it can be about the most fun you can have, you know, standing up. So, Jason, what's new with you?
I don't know.
Week?
I think the helicopter ride was a lot more fun than that. But.
I did finally get to put some time in with the H&K 45. And I'm going to take back some of my anti-HK bashing comments that I normally throw out.
Uh-huh. I have had to do that too because of the HK45.
It's made me change my mind on a lot of things. The only complaint I really have for the HK45 right now is it's still big. Mm-hmm. It is just a huge chunk of gun.
Yeah, it is a large honking gun.
But that being said, it's easy recoiling. It is accurate as all get out. The one that I shot, Mahdi had just installed
heavy LEM.
And now, why did he go with the heli LEM? The heavy
LEM is not heavy.
Because the heavy was about 4 pounds. So you
it ain't that heavy.
The light would be like.
Well, the light's pretty light.
One of our other customers put the light on his. And
yeah, I got to shoot the light.
I would have NDed that thing if I actually took it out on the range. Let's just say I NDed the dry fire.
Okay. Premature discharge, huh?
Yeah, just on the
pretty much. It turned it into almost like the old Para Ordnance LDA, the light double action that was on that. It really felt similar to that with the HK light LEM trigger.
Gotcha.
But the heavy LEM trigger that's one of the better carry triggers I've felt, and they've improved the reset on it considerably. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of my complaints come from the USP Compact. And the USP Compact came out.
Yeah, that's been 10 that, plus years.
That's a 20-year-old gun.
Yeah.
They work.
It works. It's incredibly reliable.
Comfortable in my hand.
Ergonomically, it didn't do much for me. And the reset on it was it was the first generation LEM trigger that came out in 98, 99, somewhere around in there. Mm-hmm. And it worked, but it wasn't something that I enjoyed shooting or I look forward to going to competition with and stuff. And the newer LEM, obviously they've refined it and it's a lot better than it was.
Yeah.
So, but that could be the platform also because the HK45, they've tweaked the shape of the frame when they went from the USP Compact to the P2000, then
to
the P30. They keep tweaking the shape of the frame and they keep tweaking the shape of the internal. So little geometry changes here and there make a difference.
I mean, I talked a lot about the P30 when you guys had it, and I still don't particularly care for the way the trigger works. It just feels weird to me. But in terms of just overall shape, I like that gun.
Ergonomics, I think these days you're hard-pressed to find something that feels better in the hand than either the P30 or the 45 Tactical. Mm-hmm. You know, the P30 has grip panels on both sides of the gun and on
the
rear of the back strap. And so you get a small, medium, and large for each one of those. And so there's really no end to the different variations that you can make to really custom fit it to your hand. And so they've really done some great things with ergonomics with that gun. My only complaint about that gun is it's got that gigantic slide lock lever on the side. And I like to get a high left-hand
grip. Nothing
a
Dremel can't take care of.
Famous last words by many a gun plumber.
I would never go internal on a gun with a Dremel, but for rounding off sharp edges, yeah, as long as you don't take too much off. You can always go back and take more off later, but if you take too much off, you can't put it back. Mm-hmm. So just go slow, go steady, round them off.
And like you, you know, I kind of was, I wasn't really looking forward to getting a bunch of these HK-45s in, mm-hmm. and they just flew off the shelf. You know, they only made, from what I understand, 1,000 of them in each color, and then the tan Cerakote slide and frame. They made allegedly 600 of those.
With a threaded barrel?
With a threaded, all and, these come with threaded
and
barrels.
And what are you charging them?
Right around $1,300.
And what is it going to cost you minimum to get into a decent semi-custom 1911? Probably 15, 16?
At least.
Yeah.
And you can get into the cheapest box stock 1911 I'd go with would be the Springfield Operator or the Colt railgun right now,
well,
which are,
you know,
both around 11 or 12.
Yeah, because they already have all the bells and whistles on.
Yeah.
You know, there are some sub-$900 1911s, but you're still talking $900.
And, yeah, and then work that's going to need to be done.
And then
yeah.
there's always the old, "It's I've got so much money in this gun, I wouldn't want to carry it and sweat on it and beat it up against my seatbelt holder and stuff." And that's where I'd always thought the M&P 45, if I had to have a 45, would be what
That'd
I'd
be
go
a good
with.
Way to
and
go,
the M&P is fine.
But, you know, for, it's, you can get an M&P 45 for what, 650-ish or so?
600, 619.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, somewhere around in there in the 600 range. And yeah, it's more for the HK, definitely. And normally I'd always say go with the M&P, but man, that HK just, it was a lot nicer than I expected it was going
to
be.
I was in the exact same boat as you. And I finally, when I decided to shoot one of my customers who bought one from me said, "Hey man, you got to go try this thing out." So I took it out there and I was, you know, had a little trepidation about it. I didn't really want to shoot it. I hate HK. I enjoy hating HK, you know? And I took it out there because everything is so you think it's over-engineered, you know, and it's your P-30s, you're looking at $1,000 for a polymer gun, you know, but you take it out on the range, and I haven't had luck with the P-30 shooting it because, like I was saying before, I like to get that high left-hand grip, support side grip, and my hand just interferes with that slide lock lever, causes me to
because we were there that day
induce that stoppages.
You induced several stoppages, and you gave it to me to shoot, and I ran it just fine. And then we handed it to my wife, and my wife had two or three stoppages on it.
Yeah.
And then I took it back and ran it just fine. So
yeah,
then again, I've been shooting HKs for a long time, so I'm used to holding them. You know how I can hold them to where they run.
And so with trepidation, I went out to the range with the 45 tactical, and I had 10 rounds in the 11 round magazine.
That's 10 round mag.
Is it 10? Okay, so a 10 plus one, so 10 rounds in the mag. Sent the target out to about 25 feet, and there were three holes on the paper by the time I finished the magazine, and that is when I really started to change my tune.
And I could never say, like, oh, I'll dump my 18 rounds of 9mm for a 10-round 45. Because in the end, that HK-45 is still, at 10 rounds, is bigger than my Glock 17.
Yeah.
But if there was some silly bill passed, 1994, where it said you could only have 10 rounds no matter what, then we get away from, I like 9mm better right now because I get more BBs in the
which
gun.
Which is the big reason for the resurgence of the 1911 during the 1990s and early 2000s.
But if tomorrow they said you can only have 10 rounds anyway, yes, I know the 9mm and the 45 and the 40 all perform pretty much in the same envelope. Yeah. But if I only get 10 no matter what, I might as well make them 10 big ones.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, you might get a little bit better performance out of them, but what the heck? You know, I only get 10 no matter what.
You're going to get 10 no matter what, but 10 45 is still a lot more weight than 10 9mm.
Having carried a P-14 all steel, considerably more weight.
That's all right, though. The right belt, the right holster.
Man, when I had two magazines of 14 rounds each at 230 grain on one side, and then radio, two pair of handcuffs, baton, an all-steel 40-ounce gun with 14 rounds of 45. Yeah, that got old real quick.
All right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll be going out to the phone line. So if you're on hold, hold on tight. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas Radio, Houston. If you have questions, comments, you want to join in the fun, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. All right, let's head out to Cypress. Rob's been waiting the longest, so Rob, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Oh, thank you, Jen, for taking my call. Hey, I'm not going to hang up this time like I did last week.
All right.
We have an issue coming up in Louisiana, and I just wanted to say this on behalf of our Louisiana listeners. I know we've got some people that do listen out of the state there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all have heard about House Bill 13 coming up this week, but basically what they're going to do is require every FFL to have the well, they won't be able to sell a gun to somebody who hasn't been through a training course. Okay.
Mm.
And their request right now to our friends in the constitutional side is let's swarm the House, state capitol in Baton Rouge. Of course, not us, but the Louisiana voters, you know, hit that state capitol in Baton Rouge, the committee room 6, and sign that red card against HB 13.
It's amazing to me how often the simple term shall not be infringed.
I
gets
know
infringed.
It's misused.
But
know?
It gets, or not infringed, it gets thrown the word common sense. This
right.
is just common sense safety.
Who brought this up? Do you know,
absolutely.
Rob?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It takes it from a choice then to a mandate. And every time they win something, it tightens the grip on the throat of constitutional freedom, and we've got to put a stop to it. That's what they're asking for, is don't let these people win. This is socialism, communism, this is fascism, this is everything that we stand against. And it's everything the Constitution stands
it's
for.
It's just
we
one more hurdle to put in the way of somebody who wants to think, I want to go out and get my first gun, I want to try to get into it,
right.
But it's just one more hurdle that they're trying to put in to say, you know what, if we make it inconvenient enough, we didn't take the right away, we just made it such a pain in the ass that you don't want to go deal with it. It's
exactly.
That's their way of saying, I can't ban it, but I'll make it so inconvenient, just like the NFA, and Jeff and I jump it through hoops trying to get short-barreled rifles or suppressors yeah. or whatever. How much paperwork and time and waiting and BS did they throw at us, Jeff, for us just to get
absolutely.
What's basically the same gun we already had, just 6 inches shorter.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, the other thing, too, is that when you look at it, it's a tax.
Yep.
The cost of training is a tax.
Right.
And then the waiting period, scheduling to take a training course, that's just another it's another waiting period. That's all it is. And what's going to happen is people are going to get killed because they have Louisiana has one of the best situations right now when it comes to constitutional freedom. They have the right to open carry and stuff like that over there.
Mm-hmm.
If they impose this, and what's going to happen is a wife or somebody is going to go have to get a gun for personal protection. And that FFL is going to say, oh, I'm sorry, ma'am, I can't sell you the gun until you go through the course. And between the time she goes through the course, she ends up, you know, a victim. We can't mm-hmm. have that. It's another waiting period, another tax, and another tightening of around the throat of constitutional
freedom.
And
we can see where this is coming from, too, because it looks like State Representative Austin Baden, who is a Democrat out of New Orleans, is the one who authored this bill.
Oh.
And it always comes back
Chocolate
to whatever
City,
the
New
biggest
Orleans.
Town. But whatever the biggest town is usually where that's the bastion of gun control is
well,
the huge
yeah,
urban center.
Absolutely.
The huge urban center
and the
that's
other,
overrun with
yeah,
crime.
But the other 95% of the state that says, hey, we're cool. You know, we're good with the gun law we have right now. Do what you need, and we'll take care of whatever. And then the one city says, no, 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 no. We are having problems right. with whatever problem we're having, and rather than deal with the problem, we're going to, you know, take it out on the other 95% of the state.
Right. Well,
right.
Illinois
well,
is
every
a prime
time,
example of that.
Yeah. Every time a state gives in to something, it's something every other state will eventually say, well, look at so-and-so, they're doing it. Look at so-and-so, they're doing it.
Right.
So it's not such a big deal, you know, and everybody's getting by. No, they're not getting by. They're mm-hmm. not going to – the media is not going to identify the people that are killed as a result of waiting. They're not going to identify the people who are going to kill them because they can't afford a training class. We have hunters in Texas who cannot make the training courses for their hunting license because all the classes – on the weekdays.
Right.
They
mm-hmm.
have to take a vacation day to take the hunting course.
Right. I know. We had to deal with that before we went hunting out at Mazunga Ranch. Jeff
yep.
and I did.
Exactly. And everybody, my son-in-law is still waiting. I can't go hunting with him because he has to take the course. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I was grandfathered in. But he can't take a day off.
Right.
To run down and take the you know, the practicals part of the course. And everybody's on the weekdays.
Yep.
At least everybody that's within reach of
now,
the Houston area.
I'm reading some articles on this, and I can't quite get it down. Is the state going to be providing this, or is there private instructors that are going to be providing this training? What is mandating the training?
Yeah, I think you're saying the same thing that I am. Somebody said NRA-sponsored. Well, the NRA-sponsored course, and that's what if that's true, they're trying to put it that the NRA is
behind it, which is actually opposed
by. That's not
true. Yeah,
yeah,
the NRA opposes the bill.
I would ask people to look at the NRA ILA website, and you can see when these unconstitutional legislative actions are coming up.
But in the grand scheme of things, if it goes through, I'd rather see the training given by the NRA than given by the state, who's basically going to spend their time trying to talk you out of even getting the gun to begin with.
If that's the case, I think we'd have to look at House Bill 13 and see what the specifics of it are.
Yeah, I'm actually posting a link from the NRA ILA website here in just a second.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal. Well, guys, I appreciate it.
No problem.
Y'all have a blessed day, and let's keep that constitutional freedom out there for us.
Hey, Rob, thanks a lot for giving us a call and bringing this to our attention. We appreciate that. And
hey, what are you carrying right now, Rob?
He doesn't.
Oh, he doesn't? Okay.
I don't think.
the government might be listening.
Well, we lost him anyway.
Oh, okay.
But that was – all right. So Austin J. Badon is going to be – or Baden. Or,
Baden, B-A-D-O-N.
You got to say it with the Cajun accent, the Badon.
Badon.
Badonkadon.
That was the worst Cajun accent I think I've ever heard.
Let's just say he belongs in the bidet. So we need to flood his office.
Emails work, regular mails work, faxes work. If anybody out there listening, if you want to help out your brothers in Louisiana, the guy's name is State Representative Austin Badon, Democrat, New Orleans.
B-A-D-O-N.
Demon Rat, New Orleans.
All right, let's head out to Channel View and talk to Chris. Chris, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
Oh, not much, guys. I got a story about a intersection of a booger hook and a bang switch. It didn't happen to me.
That's
it didn't
what they
happen
all
to you.
Say.
But I seem to know. I bet I know this story.
I got an interesting phone call a week and a half ago, and a friend of mine called me up and says, before you start saying anything stupid, let me tell you.
Hey, Chris, can you turn down your radio in the background?
Yeah, whatever
TV?
It is in the background.
Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so he says to me, before you do anything stupid, or before you say anything stupid, let me tell you. And I knew exactly what had happened because we had this conversation before. He shoots a SIG P229, and it's got a decocker on it. Mm-hmm. He was asking me, well, since this thing doesn't have a safety, how do I carry it without having any issues?
Hammer down would be my first thought.
Yeah, and that's what I told him. I said, hammer down and use the decocker.
Put it in that condition.
He says, what's the decocker? And I explained it all to him, and I'd probably explained it to him five or six times before. So finally, I just gave up on it, and I said, you know what? Do it your way. Find out the hard way. I said, it's in the owner's manual. Read it. So I get this phone call, and I knew exactly what had happened. He had let the hammer down with his thumb, and he got it about halfway down, kerblooey, put a hole in his headboard. The bullet proceeded through the headboard of his bed into his windowsill and stopped there.
Well, thank God it stopped somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
House or an apartment?
Well, it's a house. His house was built in like 1943 or something like that. Down South Texas, it's all oak construction, so needless to say, it's thick stuff. That's the whole moral of it is read the owner's manual before you pick up the damn gun.
Seek competent instruction, which Shiloh, I believe, offers.
Exactly.
Of course.
Exactly.
Don't use your thumb to set the hammer down.
Well,
on
you know,
with
to even get the hammer moving, what do you have to do?
Put the booger hook on the bang
switch.
And like when you pull that trigger to the rear to let the hammer forward, you have released all the internal safeties at that point.
You bypassed them all.
There's a reason they put the little decocker on the side of the gun to safely allow you to lower the hammer without deactivating the internal safeties.
We actually had a guy that was in the range this week. It was either this week or late last week that kept doing that on one of our guns that we were on a SIG that we were showing him. And I asked him not to do it that way, that he needed to use the decocker. And he said, well, that's just the way I like to do it. Well, you're inviting disaster.
You can
buddy,
like to so. Do it at another range.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it was your friend. Well, he's lucky that it was the headboard that got a hole instead of his head.
Yeah.
Or his foot.
Well, and the wild thing is his wife was standing across the room from him.
Oh, man. So he's on the couch. Deservedly
so. Yeah, she's holding over him.
Well, you
know, I started calling him Kerblooey.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Just with here in the last month or so, we saw an unfortunate incident where an officer ended up shooting his wife and killed his wife and unborn child, apparently while quote unquote cleaning his gun. And we've never heard the details on that, but it comes back to one, you know, keep your booger hook off the bang switch, and two, keep it pointing in a safe direction. Generally, if you do those two things, as opposed to, you know, not doing them at the same time, you can, you know, you won't have a problem. But, I mean, it's like the Remington 700 issue. There's a recall that's been issued this week.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that, you know, the vast majority of guns built between April of 2006 and
May 1, 2006 yeah. and April and 9, like this 2014.
Week. Yeah. They're being recalled if they've got the, what is it, the XMP trigger. And my rifle, or one of my 700s, is actually under recall, so I'm sending it in. But,
oh, just put a jewel on it, Gary.
The gun cost me $20. I don't want to mess with it.
Just put a jewel on it and be done with it.
How does somebody get a $20 Remington 700?
Call me.
I have a feeling.
Got to know a guy with a van.
It was a raffle ticket. Somewhere. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It was a raffle ticket, church raffle.
That's
guy came
they,
out.
That's what they call
it
in the hood.
Okay.
And asked Dale Honeycutt because he had it for almost a year. Finally called me up and said, "Dude, you need to come get it." And so I went and got it, and like I said, it happens to be a recall.
And I offered to trade you a Glock for it, and you said, sure, I'll think about that. Then you never did.
Exactly, because it was a $20 rifle that shoots a half-inch group at 200 yards with factory ammo.
Why I wanted it.
Would you pay off to get a Remington that shoots that good?
Dude, it was out of the box.
Well, Chris, appreciate you giving us a call and sharing the story with us. It's always good to hear stories like that where somebody didn't get hurt but learned their lesson. Do you think your friend is going to continue his training, or has this scared him to the point that he will retire the gun to the gun safe?
At this point, he's not sure he wants to carry that thing anymore.
Well, it's not the gun that's the problem. It's the operator.
Right.
It's
not the gun's
right.
fault.
Right, that's what I told him.
Yeah. Chris, what are you carrying?
I'm not carrying right now since I'm at work, but I carry routinely a 1911 Kimber.
Okay, well, nobody said you had good taste out there in Channel View. Let's see, what kind of rig are you carrying it in, Chris?
I carry a Comtech Minotaur.
All right, you have redeemed yourself. So, hey,
on the advice of Gary.
Well, Chris, appreciate you giving us a call, man, and sharing the story, and keep on giving us a call later on in the future.
Hey, no problem. Love the
appreciate
show, guys.
It, buddy. All right, so like Gary was saying, that was the Remington 700 with the XM Pro or the XMP triggers. Mm-hmm. They discovered rifles equipped with that trigger can fire unintentionally. They say, of course, it's very dangerous and potentially fatal if pointed in an unsafe direction. And they said it's specific to this trigger only. So the cause of the problem is excess bonding agent being applied in the assembly process, not the trigger itself. So do not try to fix it yourself. Do not do any gun plumbing on it yourself. Go ahead and send it back to Remington.
And they're going
to
fix it
for
free.
Shipping. Yep. They will take care of everything, so let the factory do it. The XMP trigger, just so if you want to go check it out for yourself, has a smooth face. So if your rifle has a trigger with serrated faces, it is not affected. I repeat, rifles with serrated trigger faces are not affected. Now, Remington has had issues in the past. They've gotten multiple lawsuits mm-hmm. against them on other 700 models.
Yes.
This is not the same thing. This is different. And as far as those go, every one of those cases that I've heard about, read about, saw on MSNBC, the bastion of good news for gun owners.
The same type of news agency that would maybe put explosives in a car they couldn't make explode when the Chevy fuel tanks wouldn't go off every time they wrecked one, so they had to add explosives to it to make it blow up and then put that on TV and wondered why everybody wanted Chevy's head.
Yeah, well,
same type of thing with the Remington 700s.
Big hit piece that they did on the 700. And something that they neglected to mention in this entire hit piece on all these people that have allegedly been hurt by this gun is that every one of those people that was shot by themselves or by someone else had the gun pointed in an unsafe direction.
Absolutely.
so. At themselves or somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I've heard several of those stories to be like, well, I was just trying to go over the fence with my gun on my shoulder, and I slipped going over the fence, and when I fell and hit the ground, the gun went off. It's like, why were you climbing the fence with a loaded gun?
Yeah.
You know, did you take the Texas Hunter Safety course where they said unload the gun, set it over on the other side of the fence, then
no,
climb the fence?
No, completely missed all of that.
It's got to be Remington's
fault. Takes too much time. Too much time to do that.
But then again, when you get into these, especially with hunting rifles, when you get into these light target triggers that are three-pound triggers, it doesn't take that much of a good bump to...
3 pounds? Who's got a trigger that heavy?
Factory, probably. But people set their triggers incredibly light on these nice deer rifles and target rifles, and when they get dropped, bang, smacked...
Bad things happen.
All right, let's head back out to Cypress again and talk to Lawrence. Lawrence, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening, Lawrence?
Oh, not much. Just got an Ruger SR9, and I'm looking for a good concealed carry option for it.
So you're looking for a holster for the gun?
Yeah.
Got you.
I think everybody in the room
Comptac,
be unanimous
where we tell you to
decision.
Start.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you don't like Comptac, there are other options. Sidearmer is another great company. Although I don't think Sidearmer does anything other than 1911s and Glocks right now.
I don't know.
But there's also Blade Tech and a number
the
of
big
others.
Ones, DeSantist. I didn't say they were my favorite, but Galco, DeSantist, Safari.
Galco is another. I like Comptac gear.
My only caveat to you is no matter who you pick, make sure it's a holster that is designed for that specific model of gun that locks it in securely.
Right.
These one-size-fit-nothing nylon bucket holsters are not secure. They don't hold really well. Just not a fan of those. Get something that's actually molded, whether it's plastic or Kydex or leather.
Somewhere in between.
Yeah. You know, and get it molded to the gun so that it holds it securely in there and is designed to hold it properly.
Are you looking to go inside the waistband or outside the waistband?
Inside.
Inside, I would look at the Comptac MTAC, or actually it's part of their Minotaur line.
Even for cheap, the Spartan version of that.
You could do the Spartan version.
Yeah,
60 bucks.
These are only 50, 60 bucks,
yeah.
Something
right.
like that. But,
yeah.
You know, same thing with holsters, same thing as everything else.
You get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for. Now, the Spartan line is, for the price, it's great. Yeah. But if you carry that and then you carry an MTAC, if you had the choice between the two, I imagine you would always take the MTAC.
I looked at it as I'm carrying it literally 10 hours a day, every day. And it's kind of like saying I could get a $70 pair of Acme boots, cowboy boots, or I could get a $120 pair of Justin's or a $130 pair of Ariat's. If I'm going to wear them all day, every day, and be on my feet in them all day, I'm going to get the ones that are comfortable. And if I'm sitting on this holster that's in my waistband and I'm sitting on it in the car and I'm sitting on it at my desk and I'm sitting on it on the sofa at home, I'm going to get something that's comfortable because I'm going to be wearing the damn thing all day.
Yeah. One of my favorites also, besides the MTAC, is the Infidel Ultra. Mm-hmm. It's a single point of contact, so it doesn't take up as much real estate in your pants. If you have an ample backside like a few of us do in this room,
what are you trying to say?
It might be a little bit easier on your waistband. So, Infidel Ultra
girth.
Is a good way to go, too. Tactical girth, yeah, that's a good one. I dig it. So, Lawrence, hope we could help you out there, man. I know that there's other holsters out there, but there's a reason why all of us are carrying that holster. Mm-hmm. And, the great thing about this company, about Comptac, one of the things that I really like about it is that not only is the owner an avid shooter and competitive shooter and somebody who carries his gun every day, he has... professional shooters Gordon Carroll and Randy Rogers that shoot for Smith & Wesson work for him too. So the people that are designing the holsters are professional gunmen. They are not just a guy.
Gun people.
You know, gun people. That's right.
Gender neutral.
Good job. Thanks. So keep that in mind when you're looking at getting a holster. All right. Plus, they're a local Texas company. We always like to support
the
local guys.
They are local to Houston, indeed.
So, Lawrence, hope we can help you out, man. Go get that holster, and then come try out your gun at Shiloh Indoor
and then we
shooting
can
range.
Talk him out of a Ruger and into a Glocker or Smith & Wesson.
We can always do our best. Thanks a lot, Lawrence. We appreciate you listening.
What was he going to say?
All right.
He wasn't done.
He wasn't listening.
Jeff hung up on him.
I didn't hang up on him.
Yeah, you did.
He said, actually, I like, and then it cut off.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, like I said.
I did not hear that. I am around.
There's somebody here that I'm sure knows you
I
don't
work
listen.
In a shooting range. I hear gunshots all day long.
Is he still on the air?
Lawrence, you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
See?
So, Lawrence, I'm getting called out for hanging up on you, and I didn't even do it.
You were trying to. Look, your finger's over the button.
I was getting ready to go to the next call. So, Lawrence, you were allegedly saying something?
Yeah, I was going to say, actually, I like the trigger better on the Ruger SR9, the stock trigger, instead of the Glock.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, if you've got one that runs, that's the main thing. If you put, a couple thousand rounds through it and it ran for you, then more power to you.
Well, I don't know that we've ever said that Ruger doesn't make a gun that works.
No, I've never said that. Yeah. Well, they're big and they're clunky and they have sharp edges.
Yes, but they do work.
But they do work, yes.
SR9's more of a carry-type gun. It's rounded.
It's a little bit slimmer than their previous guns.
They can do with taking the manual safety off of it. It's small enough to be silly. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put a safety on it, do like an M&P and make a safety you can actually hit.
A big paddle.
Otherwise, it's a safety that's on there just because the lawyers wanted a safety on there, and it's too small to really work that well, and that would be my only real complaint on that one.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. I mean, only time I ever put a safety on it, if it's around in the chamber. But other than that, it's off. I don't even put one in the chamber.
The SR9 is striker fired, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So it's basically a very similar mechanism to the Glock. So do you actually have to actuate the safety on it?
I wouldn't think you would. I'd just carry it in a quality holster that covers the trigger guard, and you'll be good to go.
Lawrence, did I hear that right? Did you say you carry it without a round chambered?
Yes, I do.
Do you prefer high heels or flats?
Whoa!
No, I prefer my combat boots.
But he could have learned the Israeli method or something. Now, I can tell you this. When I first started carrying 1911, I was very paranoid about carrying cocked and locked, especially in the waistband.
Yeah.
And what I did was unload my gun altogether, and I'd carry it around the house doing chores in the garage, whatever, standing up, sitting down, laying on it, rolling around on the sofa or whatever. And it never had the hammer fall after like 2 weeks. And then I actually carried it for 2 or 3 days with the safety off in the holster, no round in it at all, and just waited to see if just my movement, even if I messed up and didn't put the safety on, would cause the hammer to fall. And guess what? It never did. And I would suggest if you carry around this gun, if you're that worried about a round in the chamber, try carrying it, with no round in the chamber for a while. And every now and then, at the end of the day, check it. See if that hammer has tripped at any point. I think you're going to find that the gun is pretty safe. I don't think it's going to go off. As long as you've got a quality holster wrapped around it, I don't think you're going to have a problem.
Yeah, and we never know. We have most of the time we'll have to use two hands to charge that gun. Are you going to have two hands available to charge that gun?
Well, are you going to be pushing someone off? Are you going to be holding someone?
Are you going to be on top of you?
I'll be the voice of, I don't know what to call it, reason, but I will play the devil's advocate here and say that as long as you understand the ramifications of carrying without a round in the chamber, that's your choice. I won't tell you not to. However,
practice racking that.
Practice
boy. Exactly what I do.
Now, do your Ruger sights? Does your Ruger have Novak sights on the back of it?
It has the standard.
The standard sights. Oh, I got to pull a picture on that.
They're kind of slick.
Yeah, you need to. I would, if you're going to have it racked like that, I would definitely ditch the sights and get a set of sights that has somewhat of a shelf to them, so that you could rack it on a belt, on a pocket, on the back of your boot, on a door, on a desk. Because you're assuming that you're going to have both hands functional at this point. If you've got one hand tied up for some ungodly reason and you just can't get that hand free, it would be nice to say, I'm going to draw my gun and just rack it across the back of my belt or my heel or a door or whatever. And if you have a Novak style sight that's kind of ramped, it might not grab. It might not be able to do a one-handed rack.
So it's just something to think about.
Yep. All right. So Lawrence, we appreciate it, man. Thanks a lot for giving us a call.
All right.
Guys, turn around. I can never leave you guys alone. Y'all just turn around and bash people.
Bashing him. The Ruger will run. I got no problem with the Ruger. I'd prefer something else, but if that was all I had to carry, I'd carry a Ruger and feel fine.
Something with the round in the chamber.
Well, I'd prefer it over a Taurus or a Rossi.
Exactly.
Is there anything else?
All day.
I'd take a Ruger all day over that.
I don't mind the Rugers. I really don't. I like the SR9 better than the P-Series. The P-Series are tanks, and you can't kill them, but they are not very ergonomic. It's got dimensions a lot like a cinder block.
But it's over-engineered to the point of incredibly over. Like, that thing is going to run
forever. It's an HK.
It's a tank.
But made by Americans.
Yeah. And I would be lying if I didn't say between my dad's safe and my safe, there's probably 8 or 9 Rugers floating around the family. No complaints.
I will. We've got to get to this caller here real quick, but I will say I took out my Ruger 2245 that I bought strictly for suppressor purposes. Uh-huh. Put my Delta Point on it. I'm waiting for my call saying I can pick my suppressor up, and lo and behold, I realize it has a magazine disconnect. I nearly put it on the shelf for sale.
You know what? So I'll give you $150 for it right now.
I'll give you $5.
Ken and Spring told me how I can trade that out. I got to do something with a buck mark. I got to take a part out of there and put it in the 2245.
Oh, that looks weird.
All right. So we're going to head out and talk to Bob Fussner. Now, Bob Fussner is with Flags for Fallen Vets. So, Bob, welcome to Guns Over Texas.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Man, I am fantastic, and I apologize for having you on hold for so long. I heard that you were at a baby shower right now.
No, yeah, I was.
Well, you're welcome for getting you out of that.
Thank you. No, so, I like to talk about the firearms, so I don't think I've ever carried without a round in the chamber. So. Well,
you're our kind of guy, Bob. So, Bob, what kind of gun do you carry?
On the concealed, I carry a Ruger SR9C.
All right, there we go. Back-to-back SR9. Back-to-back SR9 calls.
Yeah. Teflon tip rounds, and don't have to worry about it. Don't have to worry about it going through somebody and going through a wall or anything, you know.
All right. Well, Bob, tell us a little bit about Flags for Fallen Vets. What do we have going on?
Well, you know, we've got a lot going on this year, Jeff. A lot more than last year, which was our first year. You know, John Hess and Mark McCoy down there are doing a fantastic job. You know, they're the guys that are setting up all the events down there this year.
Yeah, Mark McCoy is a heck of a guy. We think a lot of him here at Guns Over Texas.
Yeah, and John's doing a fantastic job. They've, here's some of the things they've got going on. This year, instead of, the traffic jam that we had last year, we're having off-site parking, and we're busing everybody over and back, and he's got, we're having a ceremony beforehand, and he's got a astronaut, two generals that'll be there, a chaplain. They'll do a folding of the flag, military honors, color guard, 21-gun salute, bugler, somebody singing patriotic songs while they're placing flags, and a flyover, a couple P-51 Mustangs, a B-24, an Orion aircraft, and so it's really, he's just done a fantastic job. So what we're looking for right now, you know, is we're looking for people to volunteer for it. We'd love to see more young people out there. We've probably got 70% capacity already, but we still have room. And we love teams and families, and you know, that's what we're looking for.
So how can people get involved, Bob?
All they need to do is go to our website, flagsforfallenvets.com. And at the top of the homepage, they'll see a link that says KSEV Radio, 700 AM. And all they need to do is click on that link, and it'll take them right to the volunteer form.
Okay. Now, do you know where the off-site parking is going to be?
Yeah, Greens Point Mall. Yep, Greens Point Mall. And it's about,
so you will be carrying a gun.
I was going to say, that's a good point, isn't it?
We all looked at each other when he said Greens Point. I'm like,
And so everybody's rest assured we will have security there for the cars and everything.
Okay, that was going to be my next
problem there.
All right.
You'd come back to find your car, just not the rims or tires.
Doors, seats.
Well, we promised your car would be here.
It's there.
Parts of it.
The frame is still there.
Yeah. And HEB is coming on. They're going to have tents set up at the parking lot. And when you get back, you'll have a chance to meet the astronaut and, the generals and be able to talk to them one-on-one. And John's really working hard, and it looks like it may come to be a fact that between 1 and 3 Medal of Honor recipients from Texas may be there.
Very cool. Wow.
Yeah, we'll have more information back that. I think he's supposed to hear back in the next week. That would really be something to have, one of those guys out.
Yeah, absolutely. So what time is everything going to kick off, Bob?
Well, we're going to kick off at the ceremony, probably between 8:30 and 9. We're still nailing down how long things are going to take and how long the buses are going to take to bring people over and how many buses we're going to need and all that kind of thing. So right now we haven't necessarily nailed the time down, but I'd say it's probably going to start between 8:30 and 9. We'll have the ceremony. It'll go, till its end. And then people will move out into their sections. There'll already be veterans there in uniform at each of the sections. all the totes this year will be locks, and there'll be a story about, you know, somebody taking multiple bundles of flags. The veterans will hand them out, or the active duty people will hand them out. So it's really going to be something this year. John and Mark have done just a tremendous job.
This sounds a lot more organized than last year.
Well, you know, every year we learn something new.
Yeah.
We learned something in Dallas the first year. We learned last year. We learned that when you have 2,000 people sign up and 2,800 show up, that's going to be going to cause some issues.
Hey, but that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That's a good issue to have.
Oh, we had, you know, we've got so many pictures of kids placing flags, and, you know, it's just tremendous. And a lot of family members that, in fact, there is a lady coming down from Chicago that she's flying down, and her whole family's there, and her father's laid to rest out there, and she's flying down to be with them to go out and place the flag.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that's awesome. How, you know, and we hear that a lot. You know, a lot of relatives come out, and, you know, it's an emotional place. When you see all the flags out, it just tugs at you. You know, it's beautiful and sad and same time, you know.
Yeah.
Run of emotions. So,
you know, my buddy that put you and I into contact, Ken.
Yeah, Ken.
Heck of a great guy. And
anything
you've got, you know, going with him volunteering for you, that's the kind of guy you want on your side. I assure you of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, his dad is buried out there. And I think one of the most touching pictures that I took that whole time was, you know, him placing that flag. And so, it really is a emotional experience and a really, really great time for people to come out and do that. We're looking forward to being out there.
And one other thing on that, Jeff, not taking away from Houston, but, you know, we'll be doing our third year in Dallas. We'll be doing our second annual in Houston. And we're doing our inaugural at Florida National.
That's great.
We'll have a third cemetery. And then after that, there'll only be 9 left that don't allow American flags to be placed. So that's beyond me why, you know, a national cemetery would be that way. But, you know, some are.
That is shocking. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. That any of them wouldn't allow it is incredible.
Yeah. Well, I had one tell me that, there's just too many veterans to lay flags for.
I was going to say it might be a cost issue, but if people are volunteering and donating the flags, it shouldn't be an issue. If it doesn't cost the cemetery anything, then it should not be an issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the cemetery can't get involved in any. They can't endorse us. They can't back us. They can't do anything. Any program that goes on out there.
Well,
even the Memorial Day program is run by, you know, it's donated funds and things like that. It's not run by the cemetery. But, you know, all. At Florida National, when we went in there, the director of the cemetery, the city of Bushnell, the mayor told me, you'll never get enough volunteers to come this way, this far out, because it's right in the middle of the state. And we've already exceeded our goal and still have another 30 days of volunteering to go. So it's been the opposite effect.
That is awesome. God bless you for what you do.
And it's the same in Houston. You know, when people hear about it, they really want to come out and experience. They want to honor the veterans that served and sacrificed. And, you know, and that's what we're all about. That's all we do.
So, Bob, when people donate, when Ken sent me the email about Flags for Fallen Vets and said that y'all were at about 60% of your budget to buy the flags, mm-hmm. how far along are you now?
We're probably 67%, maybe 68%. Now, what we do is when John worked up the budget and everything, you know, we plan on having to pay for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get in-kind donations. So he's been able to get a place to dry them, place to store them at no charge. What we're looking for right now, one of the main things we really need is we prefer not to have to rent the buses because it's fairly expensive. That's money we can use towards future flags.
Absolutely.
Is have a bus company. Our charter company, you know, give us a call and say, hey, we'd like to donate our buses for a few hours on a Sunday morning. So, and that would solve one big issue we have right now. So,
all right. Well, hopefully one of our listeners out there might know
that. Hope so. You got some great listeners.
Yeah. How many flags are you, what's the goal for flags? How many of them?
Oh, we'll probably put 76,000 plus down. I'll get the final report in early May. So, but it looks like it's going to be about 76,000. There's more interred there. because, but the way that there's probably 90,000-95,000 veterans and spouses out there. Mm-hmm. But because they have the calibariums, the walls, mm-hmm. You can only put one flag in front of each row. Gotcha. And because you can't put anything on a headstone or on a wall like that, so it sits in front of it. And then, you know, husband and wife, they're stacked.
Okay.
So it's only one flag.
All right. Well, Bob, what do people get for their money?
They're going to have an experience that they will never forget. Most people have never been to a national cemetery. Most kids have never been to a national cemetery. And it's a moving experience. It's what you saw last year. And it's something, especially with the ceremony this year, it's something that nobody ever gets to see exactly how it's done. And it's something that they'll walk away with and treasure.
All right. Well, we are really looking forward to it, Bob. And once again, why don't you tell people how they can donate to Flags for Fallen Vets?
It's through our website, flagsforfallenvets.com, or you can do it by phone if you prefer. The phone number is 817-798-9414. That's also on our website. It kind of gives all the instructions on different ways that you can make a donation. And we have for the next, I think, 10 days or 8 days that, you know, if you make a $100 donation, we actually give you a free T-shirt that we have for the memorial event specifically designed for Houston.
And $100 gets roughly 230 flags, too, right?
232 flags.
That's a lot of flags.
That's a lot of flags. Well, we need a lot of flags.
That's right. Well, Bob,
unfortunately,
thanks a lot for what you do. We appreciate it, and we're looking forward to being out there.
So, I look forward to seeing you guys.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Bob. Get back to that baby shower before you get in trouble.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
I'll take care.
Appreciate you joining us on Guns Over Texas, Bob.
Absolutely.
All right, Houston, that's hour number one down. If you're on hold, you can hold on just a little bit longer. We're going to take our 4 or 5 minute break now. So, Houston, hold on tight. We'll be back with more Guns Over Texas.
KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
All right, Houston, welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas. We were talking about the Flags for Fallen Vets. We've talked about carrying a gun with or without the round chambered. We've had a lively hour so far. So let's head out to West U. Mike, you've been waiting the longest. Welcome to Guns Over Texas. What is happening?
Well, talking about the 1911 carried with a round in the chamber, cocked and locked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The 2011 I bought from you, I actually carried as a backup in a shoulder holster, a backup for a 9mm Beretta for about 9 months because that idea was so strange to me. Not one of those days did I wear high heels. But I carried it cocked and locked.
You know, it's
kind of
hard to be sexy in high heels when you walk like a baby dump truck. I mean...
But not one of those days also did that hammer end up down at the end of the day.
Right.
And I read a lot of books, including one by one of our snipers, that made a lot of sense. And so now I carry the cocked and locked and is my main carry piece. And then I found out that you don't want to carry something like a Beretta where when you're trying to put the safety off, you're actually putting the safety on and rotating the firing pin out of the way. Mm-hmm. So I found out that the proper backup for the 2011 is the 1911. And I know they were designed in reverse, like we said last week. Mm-hmm. But those guns were made to be carried that way. Now, not by an idiot, but yes, they're made to work that way with somebody that pays attention to what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, but I do understand somebody hesitating on that.
Yeah, well, it's personal preference, and I just can't get behind not doing it. Yeah.
Well, if you need it, you're kind of behind. You know, the first thing is, if you need to draw your gun, that means somebody else already has.
That's a probably precious time.
Now you got to draw it and chamber around. I think that puts you at a slight disadvantage.
Agreed.
Yep. Agreed. Well, the old style of doing it without a round in the chamber, the Israelis and some others have advocated this. Back in the day, there were no firing pin blocks in a lot of these guns, and the firing pin was free-floating and or it was held back by a spring, but it was relatively light, and the gun may or may not have been drop-safe simply because the firing pin could move around like it could. Even the old six-shooter days when you had a fixed firing pin on your old Colts, you would carry five rounds in your six-shooter because you had the hammer resting on an empty chamber.
Yeah, as a kid, my dad carried when I was a kid, my dad was on with HPD and carried a revolver, Model 19 revolver. Mm-hmm. And when I can remember him telling me that he carried five rounds, and I was like, why? And he told me about the round in the chamber. Well, got older, saw the actual gun, mm-hmm. understood how it worked, went, no, you didn't have to do that, Dad.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, how old was it?
Well, he went on in 62. There were some guns that didn't have a transfer bar safety still.
Probably.
At that time, but it was just a habit that he developed.
But
kept.
In the grand scheme of things, a lot of these rules and a lot of these mindsets of, oh, well, you're never supposed to have a round in the chamber, it's because that rule was developed in the 1920s or 30s,
right.
And they haven't realized that mechanically we've gotten past that.
Yeah.
The Israelis, I was told by seems to be a credible source, that the Israelis carried their guns that way because they're constantly surrounded by people who don't like them, which I can definitely see that, and that they want to carry without a round in the chamber so that if they are getting swarmed, they can drop the magazine and kick it out of the way, and then they can't get shot.
I've never heard that. Now, I used to work somewhere where we saw the Israeli consulate training on a fairly regular basis, and I did get a chance to talk to a few of those guys. I never heard that, but I did hear from an old guy who would have known, who was around way back when.
I'd rather just shoot 16 people
than
drop and kick my mag.
His answer was more to the effect of the guns that they had in the early days, and this goes back to Jason's point, were such crap that they could not be trusted to be carried on one's person because they were not drop safe.
Old Browning P-35s, old 1911s.
Well, not even just P-35s. Sometimes they had older crap than that. I mean, they had surplus weaponry that was left over from World War II.
And I've also heard that the Israelis, they were trying to get a quick and dirty method of teaching everybody, and they had a mishmash of guns.
Exactly.
And the only way to tell everybody, no matter what gun you grab, it's always going to have an empty chamber, and the first thing you do when you grab every gun is wreck it.
Exactly.
And it was a standardization for we've got 60 different guns in inventory. We don't know what you're going to get. Everybody's going to learn the same way.
Correct. And that rule has persisted because,
that's the way we've always done it.
And everyone serves in the IDF, whether, if you're an Israeli citizen, you will serve in the IDF. And so you have varying skill levels there. You have some guys who are going to be shooters and they are going to be, your snake eaters and want to do bad things to bad people, and they're great folks. And then you've got everybody else. And knowing that they've got to train that broad spectrum of people, they adopted what they felt was the option of least likely harm is kind of the route they went. But, I definitely had that conversation. And every now and then I'd come across some constant guy who said, well, we are teaching the best method and it is the only method. And then we'd say, okay, well, that's fine. Let's go, do it on the timer and see what. And, of course, when we disprove them, they go, well, the timer is, we get excuses. The targets are too big or too small, or there was some other handicap reason. But it went back to an option reduction issue is what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an issue of being superior. That's for sure.
Now, Mike, you are you're a big fan of STI pistols, right?
I am.
Did you ever see the STI Ranger 3?
I had one.
Oh, you do have one.
I've got a Ranger 2.
Okay. Now, the Ranger 3 is different in the fact that you actually decock the hammer.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. It had that, I've forgotten whose oddball trigger system that was. I remember when that trigger system came out.
I have it. If you can figure out a reasonable way for me to take it back to the standard 1911 without that feature, I would do it tomorrow.
You know, I think that's probably most people's feelings as well.
Is this the trigger that after it's cocked, you push the hammer?
Yeah, you push the hammer forward, the safeties roll up, and so then when you want to get on the gun, you press the safeties down, the hammer cocks itself, sort of.
It's still, and here's the whole thing. That's a two-piece hammer and hammer strut on there,
yes.
And basically it's cocked, and when you push the hammer forward, you haven't relieved the pressure on the mainspring. It's still a fully cocked
gun,
and it's only cosmetically a hammer forward in that respect.
Right.
It does nothing but make people go, oh, well, look, at least the hammer's not back. Little old blue-haired ladies at Randall's now see the gun in your cop holster or something like that and don't think that the gun is cocked and ready to go
off. I don't know if it's even listed in their catalog.
It's not.
I think it went away because it has issues. I can't tell you what issues those are, but it has issues.
I am definitely looking at their page, and I do not see it on there at all. So yeah. It seemed like kind of a cool concept, but...
Yeah, I mean...
It's a cool concept, but in practice... there's no. Everybody can make little improvements on their 1911s or 2011s, but that I think is not one of them.
Yeah, agreed.
That goes back to like the idea of pistons and ARs, and you're trying to shoehorn a mechanical feature into a platform that wasn't designed to have it.
But
and with a 1911 or a Browning High Power, you're trying to machine or trying to cram in a lot of parts that weren't designed to be in that frame.
Yeah, so. I can't even remember what the name of that hammer system was, because I remember when it came out and it was big news, like 2007, 2008, something like that.
No, it was a lot longer.
Longer than that?
Yeah, Browning High Powers had them a long time ago. I want to say Cylinder and Slide was doing the...
Cylinder Slide, I remember distinctly doing some of the conversions.
Yeah. And I remember seeing it at first for a Browning High Power, and then I saw it for 1911s a couple of years afterwards.
Yeah.
But overall, and there was a Korean pistol, a Daewoo, that had the same thing. They called it fast action.
Yes.
Where you cock the hammer and then push the hammer forward.
Right.
And again, it's still the same thing. You're still leaving a two-piece hammer with the inside of the hammer cocked fully, and you're just pushing the cosmetic part of the hammer forward.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing the LEM system is on an HK. There's still a fully cocked single-action hammer, and basically if you're carrying an HK LEM, you're carrying cocked and unlocked.
Yeah.
It's still a single-action trigger pull, but since the hammer falls forward after each pull, it looks like it's hammer down, even though it's really not.
Yeah. No.
All right. Mike, appreciate you giving us a call, man, and contributing to Guns Over Texas. How's business doing?
Business is good. Let me say one other thing that on the, my habit is to train fairly regularly, either at the each time, either at the range or doing dry fire with the laser in the carry weapon. Mm-hmm. When I renewed my commission last, as a part of that, I did the OC spray.
Ooh, you got hit with it?
Yes, sir. On purpose.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, I had a great time. And what I noticed, I've got the
ride
video.
The
and on the video, after you're sprayed, you don't go to decontamination. You have several acts you have to perform.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of one, they have replaced your gun, of course, with one of those red plastic training weapons that somebody tries to get it, so you got to sweep their hand, pull it, and tell them to get on the ground, et cetera. In the video, my finger is clearly alongside, the slide.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just that daily training, mm-hmm. which is, it made me feel good. It makes me very comfortable with the 1911 design. It carried the way it's designed to be carried. But the other thing is, it made me get rid of the 9mm Berettas I gave them to the grandkids. Because
I would have taken them off your hands.
Well, the grandkids need something, so.
Yeah.
And they're grown, so. But if I draw a weapon with all that training, as it comes out and the levels off, my thumb is going to push down the safety.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Which on the Beretta is going to engage the safety.
Correct.
Which puts you in a bad spot in a critical situation.
Let me ask you this. What do you think of OC spray as a self-defense tool? Now that you've ridden the heat
wave.
Well,
I think that we discussed this about 6 or 8 months ago, and my if I have to spray something, it will be lead and not OC spray. If you can take a 70-year-old man and have him function properly with OC spray well delivered to his eyes in the jail farm, I would not depend on it to stop anybody that was committed.
You know, and Mike, you're not the average 70-year-old guy, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to throw that out there. So.
I was going to say that, but I've seen it applied to some people that just sit there and stare at you and go, "That it?" And I've seen other people get it on them, and, it works as advertised like you wouldn't believe.
Well, there were bigger guys than me and younger guys than me just hit the ground in tears.
Well, friend of the show, Monty, learned the hard way that it's a pretty hard fall when you get hit with AOC.
Yeah. All right, Mike. Well, congratulations on taking that ride. I've yet to do it, and I don't plan on it. So,
oh, come on, join the club.
Thanks for giving us a call, Mike. We appreciate it.
Have you ridden the ride?
I've ridden the ride. I ain't doing it again. Not voluntarily, for sure.
All right. And now let's head out to Crosby and talk to Chuck. Chuck, what's happening?
Oh, I'm in the middle of giving the dogs medicine, and I knew that was going to happen. I'm up to my elbows in peanut butter. That's how you give dogs medicine, is slop it up with peanut butter. And
I've heard other things, dogs and peanut butter, but okay.
No. Oh, God. The first time I ever saw that push the hammer forward to make it look like it's not cocked and locked was on the Daiwus, and I want to say they went back to the 70s. They were basically making copies of 1911s, you know, for their use and export. I used to carry a 1911, you know, with the hammer down on an empty chamber, and then when the Series 70s came out, those were the ones that had the firing pin block, and that's when
Series
I
80.
Went to carrying it top and locked with, you know, one in the chamber, and I never had a problem. I never had a hammer fall that I didn't actually do something to cause it to fall on a 1911, and I carried 1911s, you know, stuck in my waistband and every other way that you shouldn't do it, but, you know, I was always careful to maintain them. The thing that I do like about the Ruger KP95 and the 94, for me, the mag release is such a monumental nightmare on most pieces, like a 1911. I can't drop a mag. But on those particular Rugers, I never had any trouble with them, and I like the mag releases on them. The SR9. The good news on that SR9 is the safety is so unobtrusive that most folks just don't even use it, but it's there if for whatever reason you want it to.
But the problem with that is if somebody accidentally sweeps it on, they're not going to be able to hit it easily or have trained with it. That's the issue I have.
But see, that's the issue that I have with the M&P. I like my M&P without the thumb safety. The one that I got with the thumb safety, I really have heartburn with, because it's easy to accidentally get the thing on, but it's not as it's not like a 1911. It's not really right there where you want it. Now, I mean, my preference is the M&P over the SR9, but if I'm going to have a safety on one, I would go ahead and probably go with the SR9. Anyway, on the thing with the VA hospital or the national cemeteries, we don't have a VFW in Anahuac, and so I belonged to the Baytown VFW, and we used to put wreaths on the grave sites at the Houston National Cemetery every year. And you know, the problem with the Veterans Administration is you've got some really good people, and you have got the scum of the earth at the VA. And remember that woman who was in charge of the Houston National Cemetery would not allow prayers or religious observances at the funerals for the veterans.
Yeah, that was Arcasio or something like that.
Yeah, and we literally had to move heaven and earth to get rid of her, and they just promoted her up to another job someplace else. They didn't fire that witch. You know, I mean, that's the problem with the VA hospital. It's like the Fisher House. You know, if they had put the Fisher House off campus, I would have been 101% behind it. But putting it there on the campus at the Houston VA hospital, you know, you really, I mean, that's an invitation for disaster. You get somebody who comes in from West Texas with a gun rack in their truck, and they don't know any better, and they got a 30-30 or a shotgun in the gun rack, and all of a sudden, man, they're under the jail. You're not allowed to bring
a gun. I haven't seen anybody doing that in 25 years.
I saw some poor guy come in there some years ago, literally, you know, with that. But the other thing is you're not allowed to bring a dog on the campus. You know, you can't even leave the dog in your vehicle. You cannot bring it onto the VA hospital grounds. So, you know, the bottom line is, like I say, man, the problem with the whole VA thing is you get these miscreants, you know, who never should be in the VA system to begin with, and they end up in positions where they have a great deal of, you know, authority and power, and they tend to abuse it. But I like I say, I just, you know, I really, it's so frustrating because, you know, I've been dealing with the VA myself for, my God, what, 20 or 30 years now. And,
all right, you know, Chuck, you been shooting lately?
No, I haven't really been. Guys, in the last year, I have been diagnosed with and treated for everything from pneumonia to COPD, emphysema, pleurisy, liver cancer, and kidney stones. That's the last year. All I've done is I've been a freaking guinea pig, you know, for them to practice medicine on. And I'm still not out of the woods yet.
You know what would make you feel better? Selling your Beretta Brigadier to me.
I've been trying desperately to get over there. And what I was going to do was I wanted to shoot it before I actually, you know, turned loose.
Just turn it loose.
Just turn it loose, Chuck.
But if you
just turn it loose, you won't miss it. If you shoot it and determine that you like it, and then you got to sell it, you might miss it.
Yeah.
So just turn it loose, Chuck. Just let it go. Pay for some of that medicine, man.
Yeah.
More peanut butter for the dogs.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'll tell you what.
All right, Chuck. Hey, thanks for calling, Chuck. We appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you. And we're going to take a quick commercial break, Houston. So hold on. We'll be back with more Chuck over Texas. Guns over Texas. Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you want to get involved in the show, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Now, I was asked earlier this week, or actually last week, to talk about a little bit about reloading, how to get into it, what to buy, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So we're going to question Gary about that here shortly. But before we get into that, I'm going to do a little product review. I got these really super cool toys that came into the range last week. Laserlight makes them. And so the first box that I opened was a little blue trainer gun. And it has a laser device that you put into the what the barrel would be. Once you do that, you've got multiple targets. There is a square that's, it must be like a 6x8, and it's got a reset button, and you shoot the square as many times as you'd like. The trigger resets itself. You can actually put the laser device in your own gun. The only issue with that is you actually have to, you know, pull back on the slide every time. Mm-hmm. In order to keep firing. You have to reset the mechanical reset on the trigger. But you can shoot the target over and over again. It shows you where your shots are going. You hit the the button to have you show where you've shot, and all your little dots are all over the target. We were having a great time shooting that, and then I opened up the next box. Mm-hmm. Laser light cans. They look like your average Coke can, maybe a little bit smaller, like the old juice cans that mm-hmm. have that little foil pull tab on top, you know? You shoot those, and they tip over if you hit them. Coolest thing ever.
Sadly, I see this as a way to substitute actual gun work, and I think
is not a bad thing.
It's not,
especially with
trigger
the price
control.
Of ammunition.
I have no problem with it for that. I just don't want to see somebody say, "See, you have a right to bear arms. We're giving you this can."
Well, the problem is that I'm not going to be returning many emails while we're shooting cans all over the range, all over the lobby. We had them set up all over the place, and Loser had to reset the cans.
Ah.
So really super cool products. Laser Light makes them. We've got a bunch of them at the range. You can stop by Shiloh while you sign up for your concealed handgun license. Two for $150, so $75 each for your CHL at Shiloh Shooting Range. And you can pick up the Laser Light trainers. So really, really cool product. Jason, I'm surprised we didn't play with those when you came. Did you
told
play
me
with
the batteries
yet?
Were dead.
Oh.
Because they'd been playing with them too much.
I know. And you didn't tell me who the loser was.
Much work was going on that day.
I've been in there when y'all are shooting each other with rubber band guns, when you're zapping each other with stun guns, playing with laser. I mean,
in other words, they don't work.
We're very professional.
It's a fun place to be. I can say that.
So anyway, Laser Light, check it out. Look at them online and then come on into the shop and play with it a little bit. If you like it, you can buy it. All right. So let's head out to Magnolia real quick and talk to Trey. Trey, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
Yes, sir. I've been listening to y'all this afternoon talking about various concealed carry guns, Rugers, and the like. And I'm afraid I may have made a mistake. I keep seeing a lot of polarized commentary regarding that Kimber Solo.
The Kimber Solo.
Yeah, there's a reason there's some polarizing commentary on that.
Yeah. Excellent idea, not necessarily great execution.
I have yet to see one that's reliable.
Yeah.
Come through
that's,
the range.
That's been our main experience
and
with it.
That being said, it fits my hand and it's a neat little package. It's but if it don't run, it don't
beautiful
run.
Beautiful fit and finish. Yeah. Really nice gun. It is it's a heavy hitting gun. It is not real comfortable to shoot, even chambered just in 9mm. Mm-hmm. Fit and finish is beautiful, but they just have left a sour taste in almost everybody's mouth.
What is the major issue? From what I understand, as long as you run them with 124 grain or better, you're okay. Is that not the case? Or?
I have not even seen success with people running, you know, gold dots and the federal HSTs and the more expensive, you know, self-defense ammunition.
And I haven't seen a lot of them in the wild. I mean, I haven't shot them, I should say. I've seen them, you know, in a lot of places.
I have attempted to shoot at least four or five of them.
Here's something else. When something comes out and it works, everybody's all over it online. Right. And like, this is the best thing in the world.
Yeah, and the Shield
with
is a prime
the Shield
example
and something
that.
Like that. And then they can't even keep them in stock. Whereas with the Solos, you can't find them because they came out to a great deal of flourish 3 or 4 years ago at one of the SHOT shows. Mm-hmm. And
2010,
then,
I think.
2010, okay. They came out, and everybody was really excited about it. And then the first samples came out, and all the testers who got them for samples, they weren't working the first batches, so there was a lot of recall action going on. And it just never recovered from that. And I don't see them in the wild. I don't see them for sale anywhere. You don't see anybody talking about them on blogs.
Yeah, I saw four or five back in like 2010 or 2011 or something like that. I haven't really seen them a lot since, but those that I saw were having issues, and that was people that were shooting, you know, their agency issue ammunition, which was 124. Well, and
that's
heavier.
The other thing. A gun, modern gun, should be able to eat anything you throw at it.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things,
I can't even think of a customer that has come in that has shot that has had success.
And the thing is, I like it. I like the feel of it. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
Fit and finish is beautiful.
You know, I thought yeah. I even the few that I handled, I actually even thought the trigger was okay in those examples. Now I don't know if they were representative of the entire set, but
you know, we poo-poo on a lot of guns, whether it be Kel-Tec, Taurus, you know, these kind of guns, and we hear from people all the time. Well, mine has never failed me, and that's very well could be the case.
Seem to be the case,
you know. Yeah. But with the Solo, I don't know that I don't know that I've even. I actually just got a text message from Chuck at the range, said that the Solo that they had in today would not eject the rounds, brand new.
Yeah, yeah, and you know the thing is I am probably one of the folks who would otherwise be a Kimber fan. My first serious 1911 was a Kimber. I still have that gun. It's got 184,000 rounds on it and has been utterly reliable all that time. But I've also handled probably a dozen since that have had all sorts of issues. I mean, things like oblong chambers because somebody put it in a vise too hard to fit the link pin and, you know, badly cut lugs, upper and lower lugs, you know, thumb safeties that actually snapped off.
Yeah. And this Kimber is not inexpensive either.
No, it's not.
What you're paying, it should run. And that's another gun I wanted to like it. I really wanted it to succeed, and it just...
Trey, did you get one?
Yeah, well, I bought both the Solo and the, I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's some kind of a carry elite or something. It's got a, it looks like an Ed Brown bobbed frame on the back.
Yeah.
And I've got them in a shop in College Station right now, getting some, getting the Cerakote put on them.
Yeah.
And so well, I haven't had a chance to run around with them yet.
Well, that's the big question is, before you dump money into them, I would have taken them out to the range and shot them and make sure
what
to run.
It did.
Now, if yours runs, more power to you. But it's one of those things where I've seen enough reports of negative on them that I wouldn't trust one unless I had access. If someone was going to sell it to me and I could take it to the range and run it for several hundred rounds and see that it ran, then I'd buy it. But just getting one off the shelf, I would have been, I don't know.
Well, is Kimber backing them up, or are they taking them in and fixing whatever the problems are?
Well, you know, that's all that I've heard is that they're I've never had a problem with Kimber customer service. That's me personally. And I, if your gun has issues, and that this would have been my action, would have been buy it, test it. If it had issues, send it to Kimber.
Now, because right now it's been Cerakoted, I don't think they're going to take it back for warranty work.
It's possible. It depends.
I've seen a couple of guys who got brand new guns, brand new Solos from Kimber.
Yeah.
Okay. And the brand new ones didn't run.
Yeah, but at the very least, you could then turn around and call Kimber and say, take this back, fix it.
And if you get it, if you get a brand new one back that doesn't run, you can at least throw it on GunBroker and unload it, because it's a brand new in the box gun. You can at least move it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but if it's already being Cerakoted by somebody else, that means it's going to be bead blasted or otherwise media sanded before they apply the Cerakote, because there's a whole application process for Cerakote. Then it's, you know, hopefully if it'll, at least if they do it with a cold cure, then it's not been, you know, exposed to any temperature, and there's no issue there.
Because if they were Kimber and they said, well, it probably worked fine until the guy took it apart, heat treated all the parts and messed up the dimensions, which is probably what they'd say if they don't want to replace anything.
Yeah.
What color Cerakote did you get?
Well, all they had in the shop was the Duotone, and I really don't like shiny things, so
okay.
I wanted to get it all one dark color.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable. Like I said, though, I you know, and it's unless you can stop the guy from doing it, I would say shoot it first, then make the decision of whether or not to spend money Cerakoting it, if that makes sense. Go ahead.
Is there anything out there that would be a good... The thing I liked most about it was the way it grips, everything was nice on it, as compared to, say, the Ruger LC9, which to me, the grip is undersized.
Agreed.
I'm about 6'1", I've got fairly large hands, and that's just, it's too small. Yeah.
Shield? Car?
Are you using that Solo with the flush fit magazine or with the extended magazine?
Either one. It wasn't so much the length of the grip as it was the girth.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a little bit wider than almost any of the other, you know, pocket pistols.
Yeah, because with that extended magazine, it's about the same length as a full size M&P.
Yeah, it is. But I'm similar size. I'm 6'2". I've got big meat hooks for hands. Everybody here will vouch for that. I carry a Shield, and it works just fine for me. And it was cheaper than the Solo. So
I tried a Shield. I picked one up, and I wasn't real happy with the way it fit. And I haven't fired one, but the other thing they tried was the 938 SIG.
Uh-huh.
Are those?
Yep. I've seen three so far that actually all of them ran, and they were actually very good shooters.
The ones that I see at the range run.
Yeah, my only hang up there is that it's a single action. I'm not real comfortable with carrying that in my pocket,
and it's all steel and kind of heavy for the size.
But I think that's what makes it shootable.
Yes. It soaks out the recoil.
Yeah. So. I think that's what makes it shootable. I think that's what makes it a shooter overall.
Yeah, the 938 and the 238 are actually pretty fun to try to do some target shooting with for guns that size. You know, send the target out to 20 yards or something.
I was, you know, a lot like the Shield, but it was even easier to make those 25-yard shots with the 938 than it was with the Shield.
Yeah, it still wouldn't be my flavor, though. Yeah, the XDS, did you try that?
I did. I wasn't real happy with the XDS.
Yeah.
It's a little oversized for what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's understandable.
CM9.
Yeah, the cars, there's various size cars. You got the CW9 and the you know, all the way up to the T9.
You can buy about three of those for a Solo, too.
Yeah, which is amazing because the cars are not cheap.
But
the C series is
relatively cheap, but it's not as cheap as
But again, what are they doing? They're taking away the expensive roll marks and the polyagonal rifling, and they're putting conventional rifling, and they're etching the roll marks instead of actually roll marking them.
Which is not an issue.
But it shaves $200 off the gun.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'd definitely go for the C7s.
But, the thing is, I don't want you to just give up on a gun. I would rather you, if you can.
Because his might be the one that works.
Yeah. I would rather, if you can, get that gun back before he's done anything to it and try to run it. If it doesn't run, send it to Kimber. You know,
okay.
And if that, I would rather give Kimber the chance to make it right than just, I don't want to be the guy who just jumps on him. But, the thing is, they need to have the opportunity.
And there's a Dodge out there with 200,000 miles on it.
I drove one to 189,000 miles.
But there's a lot more Dodges that don't make it to 100.
Don't get me wrong. I rebuilt the transmission at 84,000 miles.
Okay. Well.
Are there similar issues with that Carry Elite or whatever they call it with the Bob?
That is an Ed Brown feature, and I think everybody is actually having to pay him a patent fee for that. The Kimber guns overall, the custom shop guns actually seem to be okay. If you talk
those
to
are
the custom,
built by legitimate guns,
exactly,
not
because you've actually called the custom shop and said, "Build me this gun." The guns that are just their regular production line guns are hit and miss, and that's true of everybody. I'm not going to sit here and just say that, anybody makes a perfect gun. I've seen Colts that came with parts that were improperly assembled.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a potential issue there. But make no mistake, Kimber builds their production guns to a price point. Everybody does. If it's a production gun, it is built to a price point, which mm-hmm. means that there are metal injection molded parts. That means that parts are assembled not necessarily by a gunsmith, but just by a technician who doesn't check for fit and finish. There's a final QC check, and it's test fired. If it goes bang five times or goes through a full magazine without hiccuping, it's passed along and sold. That's not the same as a custom-built gun. There's a reason a custom-built gun costs $2,000. As far as the custom shop guns go, I have seen good results with the custom shop guns. My gun is an early, early production gun when it was a small company. They were trying to make inroads, and I'll tell you right now, my gun does not have the only Kimber parts left on my gun, the frame, the slide, and the barrel.
It's like my pair ordnance. That's all that's left on it.
Everything else is something else. So,
but looking at it, it's not. He doesn't have the micro gun. It looks like an officer's grip on a commander slide from what I'm seeing online here. And again, a lot of problems with 1911s come. The smaller you make them, the bigger the problems. If you keep them relatively full size, you have a lot more
tolerance. The officer's model works just fine in the 1911. I would still say stick to the 5-inch gun. That's just my preference. That some of that is born out of...
Commander is still better than officer's lengths, and it looks like he's got a 4 to a 4 and a quarter inch.
Well, the commander still has a short stroke. That's the issue with commanders. And they can be made to work. I've got two that work rock solid reliable, but just the lessons learned over the course of 15 or 20 years running them, I've come to the conclusion that it needs to be a 5-inch gun. That's just kind of where I am.
This is a 5-inch, like I said. It's just got the bob.
Okay. Yeah, it's just the bob. Yeah, and so that's something that Ed Brown came out with, and all they've done is just shorten. Basically, what they've done is it's an officer's length mainspring housing, and then they chop off the excess steel is what it boils down to. And so that itself does not generally lead to any issues with ignition or anything like that.
I had the wrong picture up.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. And so that just doing the bobtail thing, and that's what it was called, is the Ed Brown bobtail, generally does not create any reliability issues with the gun. It you can't put a magwell on it. That's the only real downside. But from a carry perspective, it actually makes the gun very comfortable to carry.
Absolutely. That's the reason I picked it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, the fit and finish on it looks really good.
Yeah, and the thing is once you get, I would have before putting any kind of finish on it, made sure that the gun runs, and that's the deal. When we build 1911s, you play with a lot of guys. If you talk to the competitors, we build a gun up over a couple of seasons, maybe potentially if you're on a tight budget, and you may run that gun in raw steel. So people are looking at your gun and it's rusting while you're shooting it because it's 4140 chromoly steel and it has no treatment on it. And so, but only after a couple seasons and that gun runs, do you then send it off for whatever final finish you want on it, be it hard chrome or Cerakote.
Start
nowadays.
Putting the money in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've already put the money in it in terms of building and fit.
Yeah,
and finish,
if you still have to grind and polish and fit, you've already done your finish on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you leave it bare so you can still
absolutely
grind and polish and adjust and tweak.
Yeah. So
Trey, when you get that back, bring it over to Shiloh Shooting Range. I will buy you some range time. for you to try those out.
I'll be happy to do so.
I'm interested in seeing how it works for you, man.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Thanks a lot, Trey.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, now to Meadows Place for Kip. Fire away, Kip.
Oh, two quick things. When I was up there Saturday, I'm going to have to jump on Mighty not showing me the toys because he knows I like ladies who like toys.
That's right. Don't you have like an alarm clock from them?
I didn't even think about it. I've seen it, what you posted. But the one thing, I'm sure that anybody listening and everybody there in the studio, you have that certain case when you're cleaning a bunch of guns, you have that bad case of hepatitis. Sat down, I was cleaning all four guns because they'd gotten to Jeff Stanford time, you know. And
they're getting heavy in the holster.
Yeah, a little heavy. And I was cleaning Colleen. She was out this whole week with her mother and such. Came home, and I said, hey, let me have it. Got it all cleaned up, putting it back together. No trigger, just trigger's loose. Nothing's working. Cock it. Nothing working. Okay, I couldn't remember off the top of my head. I was getting flustered. Okay, it'll still shoot with the magazine or not. I had a loaded magazine, so I went inside, back in, got an empty mag, put it in, still nothing. Sitting there wondering, what did I do? Oh, the little lever inside. Maybe that got screwed up on the M&Ps, the little decock lever. Oh, I forgot to put the striker firing pin in.
Oops.
Is that important?
I had to just kind of keep you humble.
Yeah, it's understandable, man. Nothing.
Oh, but
yeah, I did a Apex kit yesterday, and I woke up 6 o'clock in the morning, and this is about 3 p.m, and my head wasn't there. And I had Mahdi doing the slide portion of it, and I was doing the frame. And for some reason, I don't know why, but that slide stop lever became a safety. And I could not figure out where that safety was supposed to go in that gun. It was driving me insane. And Mahdi goes, that's the slide lock, man. I went, yeah, I know it is.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
one thing you were talking about earlier on 1911s, I carried a Kimber, and like you, Gary, my Kimber is 25 years old, and the only thing Kimber on that is the slide and the frame.
Yeah.
The rest is Barstow and Wilson Combat.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes. Is there any other way of carrying it cocked and locked with one in the chamber? I didn't know there was another way.
Well, there's some people who think there is.
I'm sorry. I thought it was biblical.
Well, yeah.
Okay. Just checking, but yeah. I just like those little times when you're cleaning all your guns and everything. You put everything back together, and you're going, what?
Kip, is it Miller time?
It is now. Now.
All right, man. Thanks for calling, Kip. Pleasure seeing you yesterday, too, man.
I know. You were training some nice ladies there.
Yeah, we're trying to get some cadets through the U of H Academy, yeah.
Oh, cool.
All right, man. Have a good one, Kip.
You too.
All right, now to Spring for Bob. Bob, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What's happening?
Well, I've heard there's a new XDS out.
Yes, the 4.0.
Yeah.
I was wondering, listening to you talk about the previous people about how they change the guns and mess them up. I was curious if the XDS is a reliable weapon.
I like it. I haven't seen any issues out of it yet. I haven't been that much of a fan of the XD series of guns, the XD, XDM, in the past, but the XDS, I like it a lot. It shoots. It's a soft shooting gun for the size. The 4.0 shoots really, really nice. That extra 3/4 inch makes a big difference in the recoil. And, they ship it with a 9-round magazine also. And that's a great feel in the hand. But that 4.0 with the 9-round mag, you may as well carry a 19 or so, a Glock 19. Because it is that 10, once you make it a 10-round gun, that grip becomes a full-size grip. So if you're going to carry a full-size grip, you may as well carry at least a compact
full-size
gun.
Capacity.
Yeah.
So it has a
if you're going to carry grip, it with the flesh fit magazine, awesome. And then carry the spare as the 9-round mag. Carry that on your belt. but it will disappear inside the waistband, and it's a fine shooting gun.
Yeah, it's a pretty slim gun. I was actually impressed with it. I too have not been a big fan of the XD series, not because I necessarily, you know, I have issues with it because I think it costs too much. But
the XD,
yeah, you know, it's originally it was a $275 retail gun, and now it's $500+ because Springfield's name is on it. But mechanically, it's generally okay. It has its issues, and as long as you're aware of those things, they're fine. But the XDS,
what are the issues?
Well, so there's a roll pin that occasionally breaks that's used to retain the striker, and what'll happen is every now and then, when that roll pin breaks, it gets down into the gun such that you can't fire the gun, but you also can't disassemble it without
disassembling.
Yeah, so you have a brick, and it's a brick that can only be serviced by the factory at that point.
Yeah, and that was one of our other big complaints, is that Smith & Wesson and Glock and just about every other company in the world, you can buy spare parts.
Right.
And if you want to go on YouTube and learn how to take a striker or an ejector or an extractor out, you can generally figure it out. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
But Springfield is of the opinion that you lowly peons cannot work on their guns, and there is no aftermarket support for the home gunsmith. You've got to send it back to the factory.
Yeah.
And that alone kind of bothers me. It's like, what is so jacked up in your design that you don't trust me to take it apart unless there's something real? All the little springs
pressure
points.
You know, they're not the only ones who do that. Remington won't sell you the parts to their trigger. That's why there's Jewel and Timney triggers out there, because Remington won't sell you the parts to it. And even now, you know, with this recall, don't service the gun. Just send it to us. We'll fix it.
I'm waiting. When are they going to recall the R51? It's bound to
just
happen.
Just give them time.
Bound to happen.
But, yeah, that's one of the issues. There's a trigger return spring that, you know, has been, the mechanics are still there. They had a manufacturing issue between 2006 and 2007 where that return spring would break like clockwork at 2,000 rounds. That has since been resolved, but it can still break. And when it does, you can't fire the gun. Again, that part has to be replaced. With a Glock, that return spring is like $4, if that.
And you can change it in about a minute or two.
Yeah, and you can still fire the gun even if the trigger doesn't work.
Just by pulling the trigger forward yourself.
Yep. Exactly. So, and you can't do that on the XD.
But those then again, we're talking about issues of somebody who really shoots the gun a lot.
Right.
Most people are going to buy the gun. They're going to put 100 rounds through it. They're going to throw it in their glove box or their nightstand drawer, and they're never going to shoot it again.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are things that we run into as high-volume shooters or being around high-volume shooters. If you're not somebody who's putting 5 to 10 or even 25,000 rounds a year through the gun, you may never see those issues.
The vast majority of people will never see it.
Your other question again?
Yeah, another question would be, I have an XD9.
Uh-huh.
It's got a hair trigger on it. Is there any way to make that so it isn't such a hair trigger? And then also the slide is for my wife, and she has arthritis, and so it's hard to pull the slide back. And so is there any way to loosen that slide up? So it's
and the smaller the gun, usually the heavier the recoil spring is to take
so
it up.
So you would actually go to a
bigger gun,
strangely enough.
The bigger the gun, the easier it is to work the slide on.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is, you know, you're saying hair trigger. I think most of us here would consider the trigger to be serviceable. It's not hair, but it's not excessively
5.5-6 pounds, probably.
5.5-6 pounds, which to us would be
pretty
now
standard.
Some of them are a little bit lighter than that.
But with the M&P or the Glock, I can go online and from 10 different manufacturers find aftermarket triggers to adjust to my need. And with the XD,
there's not as much support.
Yeah. Not a lot of support out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, how about the SIG for a woman that, you know, has arthritis?
The arthritic issue, and without knowing exactly how the arthritis is affecting her hands, we'd kind of be guessing. So, does she have issues just closing her thumb, or can she close her hand in general?
Well, she can close it. It's just having to grip it so tightly and then try to pull it without.
Bob,
the
best thing that you can do is have her do a lesson with Tracy at Shiloh Shooting Range. Tracy knows what it's like to be a girl with a gun, and she works with ladies who have arthritis all the time.
Yeah.
And so she's developed some methods that will make it easier for her to manipulate the gun.
A revolver could be an option. They even have the old Beretta style with the tilt barrels to where you don't even have to work the slide a lot of times.
Yeah, but those are mouse calibers.
I'm not saying it's a great option. I'm just saying it's an option.
I bet you one hour with Tracy, and she'll be able to manipulate that gun.
Probably.
Okay. So that's what shooting range?
Shiloh Shooting Range.
Shiloh, okay. Yeah, I originally bought her a Taurus 38, but it's a double action.
Uh-huh.
So now she's manually making the whole thing work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
and pull the trigger, you got to cock the gun while you're at it, and that was just too much effort.
Yep.
So so that's why I bought her the XD9. But
we'll send her out over to the range, and Tracy will get her right.
Yeah, I would do that before I just went to fiddle with the gun.
That'll definitely save you more gun money that you can put towards ammunition for your future days at the range.
All right. Thank you all.
All right, yes, thanks a lot, Bob. Appreciate you calling. And now out to Manville, our buddy Don. Don, welcome back to Guns Over Texas. What's happening, Don?
Nothing much, guys. How are y'all doing today?
We are fantastic.
All right. Question. I was looking at I own an ultrasonic cleaner that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, bright idea. How will this clean gun parts?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of solvent or cleaner do they use in the ultrasonic cleaners?
Some of these ultrasonic cleaners, the solution that comes with them can really it pulls everything out of the gun. There is no bit of oil left in that gun, and your gun will come out a different color than what it went
out blue.
Yeah, which is a problem we've had. We don't have an ultrasonic cleaner at our range, but we did have, basically it was a car parts cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
And it pumps, you know, some type of solvent through there, but it gets the guns, like your AR bolt will almost be white.
Yeah.
It strips so much oil out of it. And there's the,
well,
if you understand that you've got to really get in there with a lot of lube when you're done, that's fine.
The solvent that's often used is very similar to brake cleaner.
Yes.
And there's pluses and minuses to that. One, you don't want it on your hands. Two, there can be parts of the gun that are sensitive to that stuff.
Rubber O-rings and so forth.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I'm going to say something that may get me into trouble, but I use Simple Green as my solvent on my guns.
Okay. Well, I've heard that, but I was a little afraid to go with a water-based cleaner.
Yeah. Well, the whole deal is that as soon as you're done, you got to dry it out and then re-oil it. That's, you know, and
correct.
I use an air blaster to clear out the all the cracks and crevices, dry the parts, and then simply re-oil them as I usually would. And the cool thing about that is that, you know, it is water based, it's biodegradable. Wife doesn't complain about the smell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and hoppies can smell up a house, can't
they? Yeah. And so it's not nearly as caustic and not nearly as hazardous. That's just my preference.
I use the ultrasonic cleaner, but instead of using the ultrasonic liquid that comes with it, I use the Frog Lube solvent.
Yeah.
And that works really well. And the gun doesn't come out just completely dry as a bone. And Ken made a good point. Ken sent me a text message saying that it expedites oxidation. And even Kip sent me one that said that he uses Dawn in his ultrasonic cleaner, and it works fantastic.
Yeah.
So
you
can get creative with it.
Yeah, that's actually what I use at work.
Okay.
On my lock. So, yeah. But it's the Dawn dish soap.
Yep. But so that too is an option.
So, but I was a little leery of going with a water based cleaner. So the Frog Lube
solvent
degreaser.
The solvent. It's a clear
Frog Lube
clear
solvent?
Liquid. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right, and Jeff, I am enjoying that Apex trigger on that shield.
Good. I'm glad you enjoy it. I'm glad I didn't have a brain fart like I did on the one I was putting in yesterday. So,
well, that's all right. But my wife told me we can't go back in there unless we bring them boys a pizza.
We'd never turn down food, as you can tell from looking at me. So,
well, they had such a hard decision making up their mind what they were going to order. She was ready to order it for them. So. So, anyways, appreciate you guys. Y'all take care.
Hey, thanks a lot, Don. You have a good one, buddy. Boy, Dawn dishwashing detergent is a...
like a universal cleaner, dude. They use that for oil cleanups.
They use it for fleas on dogs, too. The original Blue Dawn kills fleas.
Does it?
Yeah.
Huh.
So if you need a cheap way to get rid of fleas, use the original Dawn liquid.
Duly noted.
Just leave it on the dog for about 10 minutes.
I mean, I've seen it in animal rescue for years when you have oil spills, but I didn't. Yeah, I didn't know.
I've watched the commercials, too.
Little
baby ducks covered in oil.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd seen it before that. It was the Ecology Club stuff when I was a kid.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to try to bathe the cats.
Yeah, no.
All right, so we were supposed to talk about reloading today.
We only got like 2 minutes, dude.
I know. We didn't get to it.
Okay.
I promise we'll do
it
next
week. We'll do it next week. I'll give you quick clues. RCBS, Dillon Precision. Those are my. That's where I start.
Okay. All right, so Houston, that is 2 hours down of Guns Over Texas. We appreciate you listening. If you don't have it yet, you can get your concealed handgun license now at Shiloh Shooting Range. 2 for $150. That's 2 for $150. You can give them a call at 281-444-8930 or get them at shilohshooting.com, S-H-I-L-O-H, shooting.com. That'll do it for us, folks, but we'll see you again next week at the same time. Shoot straight, Houston. Oh, actually, no show on Easter Sunday.
Ah, yes.
So shoot straight, Houston.
2 weeks.